You wouldn't think that the audio of the 2008 presidential election was endangered, or the sounds of 9/11. After all, that was and still is all over the internet. But two experts on recorded sounds say much of the nation's audio heritage is already lost, and even the newest recordings are at risk. Technology is part of the problem, copyright often gets in the way, and most early commercial recordings are not publicly accessible. Those are some of the conclusions from the first comprehensive study of the preservation of sound in the U.S., done by the Library of Congress. Rob Bamberger co-authored that study, and he joins us from the studios of WAMU in Washington, where he hosts the program Hot Jazz Saturday Night. Hi, Rob. Nice to have you.
Hi, it's very nice to be here.
And Gene Deanna joins us on the phone. He heads the recorded sound section of the Library of Congress's National Audiovisual Conservation Center in Culpeper, Virginia. Gene, nice to have you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Rob, one of the surprises in your study is that not only are the old recordings at risk, but digital audio is vulnerable as well. How can that be?
It is an irony, and certainly counterintuitive, that a digital recording made only a couple of minutes ago may be more fragile than a cylinder made over 100 years ago. But if you have a cylinder recording stored under the proper conditions of temperature and humidity, it may last for decades and decades into the future. Compact disks and hard drives are subject to failure. We all know that hard drives eventually will crash, and often at the worst time.
And there's no comprehensive archiving system for most recordings, both old and new. Gene, you work at the National Audiovisual Conservation Center, which opened a new campus in Culpeper, Virginia in 2007. It's dedicated to preserving sound. It sounds like a lot of the resources have been put towards this particular problem. Would you say you're making a dent or not?
I think we are, but I think we are an example of just how much resources it takes to assemble to do the job. So when you think about all of the digital sound that's out there in individuals' hands and small institutions, wherever it may end up, it's on a hard drive, as Rob mentioned. It's not in a system of servers with backups and all of the things you really need to have a real and sustainable digital archive.
So you can't save every recording. Obviously, that's impossible. What do you save?
Jane, your question speaks to a core problem, and that is we can't wait until the significance of a recording is apparent to save it, because by then it could very possibly be too late. So there has to be almost a visionary recognition of what may be significant later. If I can give a very brief example, there is a recording of Lindbergh's visit to Washington, D.C. after his historic flight. To hear it today, it has layers of meaning that it simply didn't have at the time the recording was made.
Is it preserved?
It is. It's been digitally preserved. It's also on the original shellac published recordings as well.
Here's the boy. He's come forward. Unassuming, quiet, a little droop to his shoulders. He's tired out. Very serious and awfully nice.
Here's another piece of audio that I know you've been working with, Gene. It's an excerpt of New York City Taxi Drivers.
Yes.
Recorded after World War II by audiophile and political ad genius Tony Schwartz. Let's take a listen.
The more you earn, the more commission you make. It becomes a competitive business. You're out there cutthroat. So you get to the point where you don't care how you go about it.
From the day I was 21 years old, I'm 52 today. I'll be 21 years old to get a hack license. I got my hack license when I was 21. Still doing. To my sorrow. Not that I'm bragging about it. Just to my sorrow.
Gene, make the case for preserving that kind of sound.
It's a time capsule. It's a vital document. It's entertaining. It's very moving, very powerful, and it really is. It's a piece of history from the ground up.
It also underscores that the universe of sound recordings and important ones extends well beyond music to include actualities like that. And even family recordings, we hope people will think much more self-consciously about unique recordings they have of people in their family who may no longer be with us.
Well, there are also official historical recordings, and I want to listen to some of this eyewitness report of D-Day on Guam in World War II from Marine Corps combat correspondent Alvin Josephi.
American transports are lying all around us. In a few moments, Marines will begin streaming down the sides of the ships into tiny landing boats. It is not yet H hour. We are still far out from land. But we are getting into the small boats early in case of Japanese air attacks. It is better to have all troops and supplies off the bigger ships, which are the first targets for enemy planes.
Rob, why isn't this kind of recording already preserved, or is it just that it's not preserved well enough?
The problem about preservation of radio, many of the networks did record off-air broadcasts, but after a certain amount of time, they looked in their storage area and saw stacks and stacks of discs, and they would destroy some of these discs. If only there were signs that said, radio broadcast recordings stashed here. But we simply don't know where a lot of sound recordings are.
Right.
Indeed, what's frightening is what we don't know. We don't know what's out there. Institutions and archives even have collections that they have had no resources and no opportunity to catalog yet.
Interestingly, there was quote-unquote preservation going on at the Library of Congress 30 years ago, but it was preservation to tape. That is, we were taking the original formats, in this instance, the format that the Marine Corps recorded on, which was either a wire recording or a lacquer recording, or something even more arcane than that called an amortape recording, and we were transferring those to magnetic tape. Well, now in the digital age, all of those tapes must be digitized, or we have to go back to the original formats and digitize them.
That raises one other very important point, that when you do preservation, you always retain the source recording.
Correct.
You always retain the original.
There's at least one recent example of a natural disaster playing a part in the near destruction of sound heritage. I want to take a listen to Zydeco pioneer Buzu Chavez live at the 1995 New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. It's from the WWOZ collection.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, dedicated to accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science worldwide, on the web at mathworks.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about the challenges of preserving the nation's audio heritage. Jean Deanna heads the recorded sound section of the Library of Congress's National Audiovisual Conservation Center, and Rob Bamberger is co-author of the first comprehensive study on the preservation of sound in the U.S. We're listening to the Dave Brubeck Quartet, recorded live in a 1958 concert at MIT. It has never been issued. Ah, such great music. Gene, why hasn't this recording been issued? Is copyright part of the problem here?
Well, this is in the Voice of America collection. So these were actually recorded by Voice of America. And I do think, in fact, that there were estate and other rights things that tied up a lot of those recordings. They also, those recordings weren't known very well. They were recorded for overseas listening for our troops. So the tapes themselves really didn't come onto the landscape of record producers.
Over the summer, the National Jazz Museum in Harlem acquired the Savory Recordings. It's a collection of hundreds of New York City radio broadcasts recorded on studio discs by an engineer named Bill Savory. And almost nothing of this collection has ever been heard. And I want to listen to some of the tracks that have since been digitized. Here's Coleman Hawkins playing Body and Soul in 1940. Rob, the director of the National Jazz Museum, told us that they're about a third of the way through digitizing the Savory recordings. Is this something that you'd rather have the Library of Congress be doing?
The gentleman who is doing the sound transfers is a man named Doug Pomeroy. And one of the great things about having Doug Pomeroy making the transfers is that Doug's ears are very much attuned to music of the first half of the 20th century. And we could go into considerable mind-numbing detail about how to make transfers of recordings from discs that were recorded during that period. It involves checking the pitch of the music because turntables did not always travel at a standard speed. It also calls for matching the size of the stylus tip in order to coax the most amount of information out of the grooves. So it requires an enormous degree of specialization.
Let's listen to some of Lester Young playing Jumpin' at the Woodside in 1939. Gene, what about technology here? The National Jazz Museum in Harlem is doing what they've called flat digital transfers of
right.
the Savory discs.
Right.
You're using the latest technology, imaging, you know, these old discs. Is that the future of preserving and archiving audio?
I think between the two, I think it's very exciting. The new technology that we are hoping will bear fruit involves imaging the grooves with a micro-imaging camera, which is an exciting prospect, meaning you don't have to actually put a needle and make contact with these fragile recordings. The original format of these recordings are lacquer discs, and they are one of the most significant preservation challenges for us. And to make matters worse, between 1940 and 1945, these lacquer discs were made with a glass base, which makes them incredibly challenging.
The bottom line is this technology makes it possible to save really damaged discs.
It can, yes. A disc broken in pieces, if you can reassemble it and get the grooves lined up, you can get sound without hearing noise from the cracks.
Here's some more great sound. Count Basie and band playing Limehouse Blues in 1938. Rob, your study points out that many of these recordings are actually in private hands. And in the case of Bill Savory, whom I mentioned earlier, he helped preserve this particular piece of audio but kept it inaccessible for years. Is there anything that can be done about that?
Bill's collection is an interesting case in point because the assumption I think that many of us made was that it was mostly of Benny Goodman. And so to discover what is actually there is quite staggering. Private collectors have acquired items that are unique, but it has proven very difficult to bring collectors and preservation institutions together. And that is certainly another of the initiatives that has to be launched in order to save some very, very valuable pieces of sound.
Here's some Benny Goodman, I've Got Rhythm, recorded in 1938. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for your interest.
Rob Bamberger is co-author of the Library of Congress study called The State of Recorded Sound Preservation in the United States, a National Legacy at Risk in the Digital Age. And Gene Deanna heads the Recorded Sound section of the National Audiovisual Conservation Center in Culpeper, Virginia. And let's go out with some more of the Dave Brubeck Quartet, recorded at MIT in 1958.